This is the Ideas Podcast, the show where L&D professionals discuss ideas over a nice cup of tea. Warning, other beverages may be consumed. In this episode, I chat with Terry Godfrey about his career in learning and development and how he continues to try new things and adapt to changes in our industry today. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ideas Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. With us today is a somewhat familiar face to those of us who attended the IDTX conference earlier this year. It feels like many, many years ago at this point, to be honest, but it was earlier this year, I did check. With us is Terry. Terry shared with us some fantastic 360-degree storyline work he was doing earlier in the year, so we will pick up where we left off there shortly. First things first, though, Terry, thank you so much for making the time to come and talk to us.
Well, thank you for the invite, and I look forward to just sharing some of my experiences. So,
awesome. Really appreciate it. But as you know, this is kind of more of a social podcast, kind of camouflaged under the guise of L&D. I always like to describe the Ideas Podcast as it's the conversations you would have down the pub after work if all you ever spoke about was learning and development, which is all I ever talk about, so I guess it is the conversations I have down the pub. But anyway, on that note, what are you drinking as we chat today?
Well, actually, I'm drinking water.
Very sensible.
I gave up soda pop and any of the energy drinks, which I never did, and then actually gave up all of that. I got enough of the beer drinking way back in college, so I just kind of outgrew that in my younger days. So
fair enough.
So I just stick to water. So
hey, why not? That's it's the sensible move, certainly with the temperatures we've all been getting recently, right? That's
absolutely
of itself. Let's see, well, I am still in the drone. This is one of many podcasts being recorded today. So for those of you who tuned into the last episode, you'll know I'm enjoying a lovely beer sent by a member of our Patreon community. Thank you once again for that. It's still very lovely. I'm still working my way through it. But it's good. One beer and we'll get three podcasts out of it. It's great. It's worth every bit of what you spent to send it to the show. So thank you. So without further ado, let's dive into what we're here to talk about then. So I think often we get caught up in L&D at that kind of strategic level implementation. We want to talk about strategy and grand plans and how we're going to, I don't know, like conquer the universe next year or whatever it might be. But at a much more day-to-day level, a lot of us, it's about creating great content. It's about creating something that works for our people, that makes a real difference. And that's kind of what you were sharing with us at IDTX. So kind of picking up where we left off, what are you doing at the moment around that?
Right now, we haven't stalled out any on the 360 images. We're kind of waiting more so for the video to come out, but we are experimenting with some of the compressor stations that we have local. I work for a natural gas company that's based out of Calgary, Canada. I'm in the States on the East Coast in the state of West Virginia. There's two of us here. The rest of the group that I work with, including my managers in Calgary, which is pretty good. So it's a good setting. But one of the things that we deal with here is how things are so spread out and remote, even out west. And so there's times though where individuals have to go to a particular location, and it may have been, you know, a while since they've been there. So we're looking at utilizing the 360 imaging to take really decent tour type photography of that facility and make it available for them to actually almost feel as if they've walked into that facility. Currently working on a course right now with one of my coworkers out of Canada, and it's on what's called Orphis meter plates. It's the meter plates that's used to measure gas. And so as a part of that course, we actually have where they actually go into the facility through the 360 images and move actually into the building that has the information and the plates. And we've done some things with some video, and then they exit that facility, and that's just a small portion. So we're blending it in with some of the existing material. But I'm with you, Tom. You know, if we're not changing behavior, if we're not moving them in a direction to be able to do things, perform them better, then we really don't need to be creating anything. So, and publishing it. So.
No, absolutely. And I feel like sometimes, especially with a lot of the amazing technology that we've got at our disposal these days, that point can get lost. It's very easy to get excited about the latest, you know, insert whatever you want to talk about here kind of thing. You know, whether it's, you know, we've got a real big focus on kind of skills-based technology now, which has the potential to be great, but also the risk of technology being the solution when in actual fact we still need that human element. I think, you know, authoring tools has plenty of that stuff, whereas a lot of whiz-bang and not enough useful content out there, if you will. So, I mean, what's your process, I guess, of making that differentiation when a request comes to you or someone's asking for something in the business? How do you decide whether or not it's something, you know, you can and should be supporting with content?
We have a formal process. It's called a request for service. Unfortunately, and I say that wholeheartedly, our particular technical group just recently moved into HR, which I'm not too fond of in terms of the type of career that I've been in for the last 30 years. But we get a formal request normally from some stakeholder. It could be a stakeholder, a client, it could be an SME. A lot of those could be end up being engineers, could be a department head or a director. So, and it's pretty flat out, straightforward as to requesting. The most recent one I received, said we need an LMS course. So, you know, the solutioneering had already taken place before it even got to me. So my responsibility after probably, within the last year or so, has really been approaching that from a different angle. Instead of beforehand, it was okay, send me the material and we'll get it out there, we'll get it published, get it pushed, whatever. But more recently, within the last, I'd say, 6 months to a year, I have a discovery call with that individual, and within that call, I do not mention anything about a course, job age, videos. I don't mention anything. I just want to find out exactly where this request is coming from. Is there a need? Is there a gap? That sort of thing. I do know a lot of the SMEs. I've worked with them over the last 3 or 4 years. So that relationship's been built. They know where I'm coming from. My background as a technical trainer in another gas company for 8 years, they know where I stand. You know, I have some experience and some knowledge, you know, about this industry. So they're very comfortable with that. So once I get that particular information, like the most recent one, I kind of pondered over it and really decided that a course was not needed. So then it was a matter of going back to those subject matter experts and trying to convince them. But once I got back to them, I was able to dig out some more information. And in all reality, a course is needed, but approaching it from a different way. So I remember, I think in Kim Tooney, the conversation you had with her, one of the things that you had mentioned that you all had started doing was approaching the users, the people in the field, without even talking with the SMEs. And I began doing that myself, which before I even speak with the SME, I talk with the users. I work in a field office, so it's not difficult for me to go round up some individuals that's actually going to be getting their hands on this and find out some more details. And then I go into the conversation or the kickoff meeting or the discovery meeting, at least having a good understanding of what they really need based upon those individuals out there. So from that point, it's just, it's a matter of staying in communication. We set deadlines. we set normally like a due date, and then what we'll end up doing is what we call a publish date and a push date. We just recently, as a corporation, changed LMS systems and went to Workday. Okay. And I think it's going to be a better system, but it's really pushing back. It's pushing onto the workforce, the employees, a lot of responsibilities. And we have a very older generation of technicians here in the States that they just want to come and move gas. They weren't hired to learn. So, you know, to take 140, e-learning modules every, year. So, we do fight that or battle that. And I've been there, so I can sympathize and empathize with them, which is a benefit. So.
Definitely. And it, funnily enough, I think actually, in my experience anyway, my drive to speak to the end users first actually started in exactly that kind of environment where I knew I was going to be asked to create content or create some kind of intervention or support for people who had 30, 40 years experience, laying pipes and cables and digging holes in streets and doing stuff safely. And there I was going to be in my kind of early 20s trotting up going, now listen to me because I'm going to train you. That's probably not going to go down too well. As you say, there's for better or worse, it's human to say, well, hang on a minute, I've got all this experience, just leave me alone to do my job, right? And I found engaging with that audience and almost acknowledging the look, I want to speak to you because, you know, we may have SMEs and stakeholders, but you're the boots on the ground. You do this day in, day out. No one knows the job better than you. And I think the thing that always sort of never fails to surprise me, even now in every organization that I work with, the stakeholder and SME perception of what's happening in the business is wildly different to what's actually happening in the business. How have you found that, and how have you kind of bridged that gap? Because I know it can certainly be quite challenging, I've found.
One of the things how I approach the SMEs that I work with, and we work with a lot of SMEs in a lot of different areas. We still support the corporate side through safety. It's everything. Now I'm more of a blue collar type, e-learning designer. Actually, it's something I've even thought about creating some kind of a podcast called Blue Collar Podcasting or something. I don't know. But one of the things that I do is approach my SMEs with the understanding that they are presenting to me in the context of what they know, not from necessarily the experience. They're not really presenting to me the content. They're presenting to me their context of what is actually needed, good or bad. Sometimes it's not so good. You may have the lowest SME on the totem pole that got pegged for, to create this course with, less than a year of experience in this industry. And they're coming to me, with all of this content. I'm a very, very relational type individual when it comes to working with especially field technicians. I get in a little trouble with kind of the white collar type people, but because I speak my piece, but I think that comes from an experience side. The SMEs come from I work with them in the sense that I try to find out where they're coming from their context of what is needed. And that's, your sharing that one day kind of changed that around to where now I'm comparing the two with the end user, I think is what you referred to them as. We used to say the learner, and I'm like, no, they're not learners. They're technicians that are here to move gas. They're not learners. They were not hired to be learners. And, now that we're in HR, I have to kind of mince my words a little bit because of, you know, the HR side of this industry is more from an educational standpoint, the old school. You learn things, you take a test, and then you move on. What we need to do and what I'm trying to do is create experiences to where they are able to understand the process, but it carries through from one job to the next. My goal is to create e-learning that they want to take, not just take to get off their learning plans. And we've had an awful lot of that, unfortunately, in the industry that I work in. So,
no, and I think it's true in most organizations, that I would say 90% of training is created because, well, we've got to have training on this because, well, we just do. And therefore it gets created with mm-hmm. that mindset behind it. But I also think there's mm-hmm. sometimes, I think, a bit of a misinterpretation, of what someone enjoying training is going to be. Because I think often we fall into the trap of thinking, well, if someone's enjoying training, they're going to be nonstop laughing, or they're going to do it in their spare time. It's going to be the thing they want to do before anything else. So when you talk about people kind of enjoying learning, what exactly are you looking to create for them?
You know, we use all the bells and whistles. We're really big on articulate, that whole suite, you know, the storyline. But what I try to do, yes, I use the drag and drop and all of that. But once again, trying to create an experience, and this course that I referenced to early on about the orifice meters, that's one of the things that we're actually doing in this particular course, to where when the technicians log into this course, it's more of a journey of going into it. It's taking into consideration their existing level of knowledge concerning this topic, their experience level. Yes, there are some things that we, I hate to say, force feed them to take, not necessarily take, but read. So the enjoyment is when they leave there, you know, the highest accolade that I could receive is like I actually learned something. And so that to me is the joy behind it, or the enjoyment of, you know, I'm not big on gamification. I know that's a big old huge word out there about including, you know, I don't include the bingo games and the word searches and all of that in any of my e-learning courses. Sometimes we just let it speak for what it's worth. Long story short, one of the first things that I had to build about 3 years ago is working with a gas storage director who was involved with writing the rewriting procedures for OSHA. And so he wanted 26 courses created on this new procedure. And so he had all of these PowerPoint presentations that he was feeding me, and the smallest one, I kid you not, was about 65 slides, and each one had was full of text, no graphics, it had stuff pasted. And so one of the things that it was a really big paradigm shift for me as a designer and a developer, because I'm like, this could be a royal nightmare for the user, for the person, but it's going to kill me, you know, putting it together. So, I went to the director, and he was very cooperative. And I said, hey, out of this, what do they actually need to know in order to perform this? And that narrowed it down to less than half of what he supplied, but he still wanted that additional information in there. So we created opportunities for them. If they wanted to go take a look at it, they could. If they didn't, that's fine. You know, they're adults. They're not children. This is not the school system to where you will learn this. But that was a very successful endeavor, 26 of them in 1 year. You know, it saved the company somewhere around $300,000, internally, which I saw none. I think I got a $500 spotlight award or something. So, you know, the recognition was to know that we succeeded. So I don't know if that answered your question or not, but I think it's not so much enjoyment, I guess, or having fun. It's a matter of adding value, to where they stand existing with their knowledge level and skill level.
Yeah. No, and that's kind of what I was touching on. Cause I think it's with enjoyment. I think we tend to jump to that extreme end of it's got to be funny. And a game is a prime example. We love just the word gamification. It sounds daft. I'm not convinced it's a real word. I'm fairly certain it was created by a marketing department somewhere. more importantly to me, when I think about, I want my, or it's same with engagement, I suppose. When I talk about those kind of things, what I want is it to be in context and relevant to the learner.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think at a human level, when you learn something, it is an enjoyable experience. Mm-hmm. We all get that, right? Whether it's, and you broke something at home or something broke at home, and you've found a YouTube video and you figure out how to fix it and you succeed. It's a great feeling. And I think actually that feeling of enjoyment, if you can get that in your learners, as you say, that accolade of I learned something sounds simple, but actually how much workplace learning have you attended where you've left gone, yep, learned nothing at all. What a waste of my time. And I think that's why when we see that hesitance around, do I have to do this? Do I really need to learn anything more? I think that's where that comes from, is the fact that they've gone to so much training and taken nothing from it. They just perceive it as dead time.
Well, to be honest with you and tell you a little bit about our company, when a new technician comes on board, and again, the favorite words is, I kid you not, 120 e-learning courses are automatically assigned to them. And that in and of itself just completely destroys them from a learning standpoint, because, and I've shared this with my manager and the people that I work with, and we have a really good staff and a really good manager. I think they're really good because they're all in Calgary, and I'm in West Virginia. So. but I shared, I said, you know, when they see that, their number one goal is to get that down to zero. It's not to learn anything. It's to go in and knock one off, to knock this one off, because they're out there moving gas. And so, you know, if those are laborious and not put together well and don't add value, it just makes things even worse. You made a statement in one of your other podcasts. I think it was with Heidi Kirby. You were talking about being up in front of a classroom or teaching, which then gave you more of a leg up on the ability to create things. I actually started out as a school teacher in the early 80s. I grew up and wanted to be a football coach and a phys ed teacher. And I grew up in southern part of West Virginia, so I didn't want to be in the coal mines. So that was my ticket out of there. I was able to get that. So I actually started teaching, and for 3 years I coached high school football, and we had a local chemical plant here, which was booming back in the mid 80s, and was offered a position as a chemical process operator, which the thing that lured me there was the money. It wasn't that I was going to have to turn wrenches, because I had no idea, you know. But spent 4 years doing that, and then was asked to be in their training department that had just started a year before, in my third year, and spent 15 years there as a training administrator. Now, we did a lot of safety teaching, a lot of training, but part of my responsibility was to administrate the qualification process for our operators. Spent 20 years total there, was downsized, and then went to work for a natural gas company, and was actually a technical trainer, teaching skills in compressor measurement, corrosion. So from there, I moved over to an instructional design position where I'm at now. With that background, which has been nothing but a total blessing. I have SMEs just tell me what they need, and they just get out of the way. I'm a big person on prototyping. I like to get them something that looks really good to the point to where they have a good understanding of what, where it's going to go. And then, you know, they've got full-time jobs, you know, they have day jobs, and the least amount of, burden that I can put on them, the more cooperative they're going to be. So, I've had great success with that. I'll prototype something, give it to them. So the review process is normally about one or two, maybe three maximum times, and then we're off and running to the next one. But, you know, my background has really enabled me to be successful. So long story short, I've actually been in this field since 1991. So I'm one of the old school guys in the group that I'm in. You know, I got all these 30-year-olds and I'm soon to be 63. So,
but I find it so interesting because it's kind of one of the things that when I was chatting to some people the other day about becoming an instructional designer, and a lot of them, you know, there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with knowing that you want to go into L&D and you want to be an ID. That's great. If that's definitely what you want to do and you genuinely know what an instructional designer actually does, because it's not just sit and make e-learning, as we all know, unfortunately, right? Yeah, wouldn't that be a much easier
quite
job?
A few, than yeah, yeah, there's quite a few other hats that you kind of put on. So
that's it. But I was kind of saying the one experience that I wish all these people could get is a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years of standing up and delivering training to rooms of people, mm-hmm. especially onboarding training. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a baptism of fire of, do you actually understand learning? Can you get your head around what that process looks like and what works and what doesn't? And you get very real, very immediate feedback. Because if someone doesn't get it, they're going to ask. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you dive straight into the world of digital, you never get that immediate feedback. You can maybe get, I mean, I chatted with someone the other day, they were very honest and said, look, I've been making e-learning for 5 years. I don't really know whether or not I'm any good at it. I'm still employed. Mm-hmm. I said, but can I guarantee that all my courses are really effective from a learning perspective? No. Mm-hmm. So I've got no data to back that up. So I've got data that the company collects on hours delivered and general performance stuff. So, but can I say that is because of my understanding of learning? No, not really. And we kind of chat about that is exactly the experience that they wish they'd had, is standing in front of a room of people and seeing what works, getting a genuine organic feel for it. I don't feel like there is a kind of alternative to that. I've never found another way of getting that experience.
Well, I know when I was working for the other company as a technical trainer, with my primary focus in the compression side. But I also was still designing and developing and publishing e-learning courses as well. But, you know, it wasn't uncommon for every other week me to be in front of technicians and, you know, teaching them about operator qualification. So at some point, you know, I was asked to put together some training material on training out or actually changing out the valves on a compressor. And so to do that, I actually went out in the field down in the southern part of the state. These guys, I didn't necessarily grow up with them, but we knew each other because of where we grew up, and actually turned wrenches with them for 4 days. And could I do it now? No. I mean, the thing they bought into me when I was even willing to do that. So if I was standing in front of a classroom, they didn't hesitate to kind of let me know that what I just said really wasn't the right way. And I was able to kind of move it into their lap and get them more involved and say, well, you know, then share with us, you know, where was I wrong with this? Because they knew I had an operated compressor station. So, you can't do without that. I think there's so much benefits. And unfortunately, and I say this, you know, our instructional designers out in Calgary, and I'm not saying this to be bad or say anything negative about them, but none of the ones out there have been in the field. and they're designing courses for the field. You know, they're, and so, you know, they have their hands tied a little bit. It's a little bit more difficult. It's a little easier for them to put a next button, which, you know, that's another pet peeve of mine. So,
No, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I always remember that one of my favorite managers that I ever worked for before going out on my own was, fantastic lady. And she was very adamant when I started on the team, before you do anything, you're going to go and do the job that you're going to be training people to do. Mm-hmm. And the first week of my paid time working in that business in the L&D team was an actual fact spent doing a little bit of time in the call center and going out to the field, mm-hmm. and going out to different places and going, oh, this is what our people do. And then coming back and going, okay, so now look at the induction training and tell us what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually can that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when I first started in the chemical business, I spent 4 years as an operator, mm-hmm. on shift. You know, I mean, we moved chemicals, pumps, valves, everything. So, you know, everything, and actually enjoyed it, learned an awful lot. So when I moved into that training group, we had an apprenticeship program that all of our operators went through. It was through the federal government, and it was really, really good. We were tied in with a local college. You could complete this apprenticeship program, take, I think it was 7 classes, and end up with an associate degree. So, but my background, one of my degrees is in science. So I also taught the sciences of the apprenticeship program. So, you know, to know and to have that experience is just so valuable. It's just, I can't stress it. So. But unfortunately, I mean, we've had a tremendous exit of school teachers in this country and your country. I mean, and I think, you know, and I'll just be very honest with you, and I think we can do that. And if you don't, you know, I think some of them are being misled. I think, tremendously in terms of, you know, go online, get this experience in terms of learning how to do this, learn how to do that, get these certificates and make 6 figures. And, I'll be very honest with you. I mean, I get compensated very well, but the big thing with me right now is I would go out and branch out as a freelancer tomorrow. The big thing is insurance. At my age, it is just astronomical. And I've got a wife, she's retired. And neither one of us are sick, but you know, we're at that age that it's could be right around the corner. So, you know, that's one thing, but I don't think here in the state of West Virginia that I would come close to making 6 figures as an instructional designer, you know.
I do feel like that particular thing, because I think a lot of different places have either promised it or heavily suggested it in different ways. And I do just feel like it's, first of all, they're not giving out jobs.
Right.
You know, it's anyone that kind of says you'll get a salary of, unless they're the ones hiring you, they got nothing to do with that. So
absolutely.
And certainly, I mean, like I've not been in the industry like a huge amount of time. I'm coming up on a decade here, but I'm nowhere near 6 figures. And in all likelihood, I will never, if I'm in this industry until the day I retire, I will probably never have a 6-figure salary. I run my own business at this point.
Right. You know, absolutely.
It's not a multinational 1,000-employee business, you know, but there's enough of us whereby, you know, I think a lot of people would expect there to be that kind of salary. There is money in L&D, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't suggest joining the industry if money is your primary concern in a job. If you just want to make money, there are much more lucrative businesses to go into that are far less demanding.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not going to deny that I haven't sat down and really kind of, I don't want to say analyzed a move such as that nature of nature. But, you know, when I start looking, all of the tools that we have, I mean, the camera that I'm looking at, the microphone, the headset, the computers, the monitors, the desk, software, we've got brand new, computers on order right now that, have, you know, terabyte hard drives. I mean, just all of that supplied for us. You know, as a corporation, my big thing is retirement, you know, fantastic 401. So there's a lot of other things involved. But I will tell you that I literally, after 31 years, 91, I have literally the best job that I've ever had in my career right now. I live 15 minutes from here. We work a hybrid schedule. If I want to work from home on the days that I need to come in, I can. I've got a great coworker. I work in a field office. I can wear blue jeans, tennis shoes, and a t-shirt to work. So there's a lot of things, you know, you know, when you branch out on your own, like yourself, there's so much that I don't have to worry about, which enables me to be better at what I enjoy doing. I saw a quote the other day from Dirty Jobs. I don't know if you all get that over there. It's Mike Rowe here. He actually goes out and actually performs these dirty jobs that nobody wants to do out in the, and they videotape it. It's a reality show. If you ever go out on the internet, you can just call, his name's Mike Rowe. It's called Dirty Jobs. It's worth watching. But he said a quote. He said, you know, don't pursue your passion, bring it with you. And I kind of like that, to the point to where, you know, I'm not pursuing something. I'm already there. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, have you reached the pinnacle of what you set out to do? And I said, one, I didn't set out to do this, set out to be a school teacher and coach football. But yeah, if you want to ask me what I'm doing right now, absolutely. Have no desire to be a manager. I have no desire to move down that realm. At one time, yeah, but my wife was a principal and a vice principal for 33 years, and according to her, I could never be a manager. So, you know, so I didn't have the patience for it. So,
I get that.
Yeah, everybody does not think like you, and everybody does not do things like you. But it's people like you, Tom, that are on the airways and that are in writings and stuff that I think a lot of the new people need to latch onto. And I don't think you're out there trying to be any type of role model. What I like about your shows and your writings is you're just blatantly honest and you speak from your heart, and from what experience you have. And it makes me think, I mean, even with the years that I have, and it's changed my perception and direction tremendously within the last 6 to 8 months and even a year. So,
oh, well, thank you. That's very, very, very kind of you. We don't do a lot of that on this show, but it's funny, before we started, because I'm aware we're coming up on the end of our time slot, but before we started, we touched on the fact that, you know, quite often when someone's been in the industry a very long time, they very much, I don't know, get a little trapped in the, this is how I do things, I have reached the, I don't know, the pinnacle of my career, and therefore I'm done adopting new ways of doing things. And you were saying you're kind of at the polar opposite of that, which I found really, really interesting and really exciting.
Well, just recently, I would say within the last year, you know, I don't set New Year's resolutions, but I set some goals this year. And one of the things, and some of the goals were to do what I'm doing right now, which I'm very thankful to share some of my experience, not necessarily my knowledge, but more so my experience. There's a lot of knowledge out there. But within the last year, I journeyed into the AR realm and took an AR AR class, and absolutely loved it. You know, and I was the grandfather on that cohort. I mean, everybody on there was in their early 20s, and, you know, they're probably saying, what's this old guy doing? And absolutely had a blast. Now, you know, we had to turn in assignments, and one of my assignments was an AR, augmented reality on the Walking Dead, which is a show over here. I don't know if they have it in the UK. So I'm a big fan of that. So I created a Walking Dead with a quiz from the early days. So here recently, I went through Chris Carroll's video for learning, 6-week cohort. I want to learn more. Constantly on LinkedIn learning Adobe Premiere, Adobe Photoshop. Actually went out and watched your 3 tutorials on what is it? Is it a
Adapt.
Yeah. Now the thing that, you know, I'm still learning from a technical, when you started talking about servers, and I'm like, oh, okay. So, I'm not giving up on it, but I like that software. I'm like, wow, this is some good stuff. I mean, Rise is good. And of course they just made it so wonderful here recently with all of that pretty stuff that they published, but, you know, what you shared, that is some really good software. And I'm not done with that yet. Went through a course, here with, Luke Hobson on, working with, and collaborating with SMEs. So here I am 31 years into this and learning about working with SMEs, but we can always be better and always get better. And some people is like, I'm already there. What else do I need to learn? Hey, you know, the world that we're in right now, I can assure you, is totally different than what it was when I was 25 years old. you know, I can honestly say in 1992, I saw in a computer magazine that some guy left in my office, and it was talking about computer-based training. And I looked at the guys that I worked with, and I said, this is where this is going to be going in the future. And so from that point forward, I just kind of pursued that. Love learning, love reading, that sort of thing. Used to love playing golf, but, you know, you blow out knees and all kinds of good things, and you just can't do stuff like that too much anymore. So.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's a job. I think it's really refreshing. I think regardless of how long you've been in the industry, I think it's really quite challenging to continually embrace not knowing everything. I feel there's an urge to be an expert now. Everyone wants to be seen as an expert be an expert. And, you know, whether you've got 10 minutes experience or, you know, 40 years, I always kind of think, I don't know, I never want to be an expert. Because there is always going to be something. I don't think you can really master a subject, because as soon as you have mastered it, something new will come up, or a new interpretation will arrive, or whatever that might be. So I think it's not only is it great professionally, I think it's at a human level. It's a really healthy way to view yourself and life and everyone else around you. Because if there's always something you can be learning, then that's true of everyone else as well. I think it naturally makes us a bit more generous towards others. Whereas someone says something, you think, oh, that's a daft thing to say. Well, you never said anything a bit daft? I know I have. Heck, I've regularly done it on the internet for everyone to enjoy and for it to be immortalized. Hey,
well, I enjoy. I mean, I actually stand up and applaud sometimes. I'm like, oh, wow, I wish I had the nerve to say that. But I've been very blessed. I will say this throughout my career, especially with my wife of 38 years. So, she's supported me, in learning new things and encourages it. I've had managers that in my earlier years that put me out there to learn new things, that, pushed me, made me uncomfortable. And now I've got, a coworker that's right across the hall that's constantly coming over and saying, hey, I want to show you something. And I mean, he's teaching me things in Photoshop, where he's a photographer. He has a side hustle type thing. And so he's teaching me how to, take a photograph of a technician out on a right of way in a field. And what we do is we just, you know, do things with the background and make him stand out in color. And people in our courses, some of these technicians, I mean, we'll get phone calls and they'll be like, you know, in that module, the thing that caught my attention was the graphics that you know, and it, I could relate to them. And so, yeah, I mean, we're constantly, you know, handed stuff and told to make this pretty, you know, irregardless of whether it adds any value or not, just make it pretty. And I'm very big on making things pretty, but I also want to make it, as you said, in the context of adding value to that, those individuals that's going to be taking that. So, you know, my big push now is, if it's not a course, I'm trying to get up the nerve to just kind of say, listen, you know, we do not, and I've done that here recently. We don't need to build a course, you know. And I had a director look and said, well, you know, we just need to address this issue. Whatever you come up with, I trust. And they left. And I'm like, eh, that's what we want. We're the experts in this area, or the subject matter experts. Yeah. So when you get a director at that level, but once again, and people have to realize this, I've known this individual for about 6 years. And so there's been a relationship built, and she knows where I stand, and she knows that I have the best interest of the receivers of this material at heart. I tell the people I work with constantly, we are not building these courses for ourselves. We're not built. We shouldn't be building them for an SME, you know. And so, and it's still an uphill battle. We'll see. We'll get there. We're getting there slowly, but I'm impatient. So.
And that's standard for all of us, isn't it? We all wish we were there. But I think making progress, to be honest, is the best any of us can ever achieve. It's never going to be final state for any of us. It's always going to be, you know, whether it's, you know, in my case, moving to another organization to help them start making the progress, or if you're in the same organization, you just got to focus on moving the dial until then you hand it off to someone else. You know, it's kind of the best way to be. But we are coming up on the end of our time. I just want to finish up with one last question that I'm asking everyone at the end of these episodes, which is, right now, when you look at the L&D industry, the whole field, what do you see and get really excited about and want to see more of? And what do you see that is maybe a little bit more concerning or that you're not sure about right now?
Well, I think a little bit more concerned with, I think the shiny new toys that seem to be coming out every, you know, so often, we are choosing to not stick with something that's working. We see something that allows us to do something a little bit different or new. And that's a concern. I mean, there's just software one after another coming out. So that's part of the thing. But as far as what's exciting is the opportunities, I think, to create performance and behavioral changes still exist. We've not even come close to addressing that side of this business. And I think there's just opportunities galore for us to make a difference in that area. And I'm talking about behavior change, not necessarily knowledge. I think there's just way too much knowledge dumping out there. We're just throwing stuff around and calling it training, when in reality it's might be good information, but it's not training. So
fantastic. No, I think that's a really interesting point there to kind of go away and think about, because it's certainly, I'm sure we've all seen plenty of knowledge dumps out there disguised as e-learning or training. And it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge to get rid of the existing ones and not create more at the same time. But thank you so much for taking the time to appear on the show. If people want to get in touch and continue the conversation, where's the best place to contact you?
I think just out on LinkedIn. You know, I have a, you know, I'm not a poster, for lack of better words. I think I got a notice the other day that said you made your fourth post, and I was like, I did. So, but that's something that, you know, I'm going to begin doing. It's a part of the change that I'm pushing myself to do, to offer up some experience out there. But that's the best way, is just through that type of messaging. If they want to look at our company, which I don't necessarily need to mention it, but you know, they could find me through there. So.
Fantastic. Yeah, no. And we'll make sure there's a link to Terry's LinkedIn in the description of this episode. I'll also include a link to the IDTX session that you did for us, so people can see that work. It is a really interesting use of 360 in storyline, which up until that point, I'll be honest, I had only ever seen used with some really terrible gimmicks that kind of served no purpose. It was the first example where I went, okay, yeah, I can see why this is actually adding value from an end an end user perspective. You know, this has a purpose, this use of it, rather than just being, isn't this impressive? Look what we can do.
I learned so much. That experience was just so valuable. I'm actually redoing that again here in August for our state local ATD lunch and learn. I've kind of changed it around, but it's really encouraging to hear what you're saying, because that's the intent, is to create an experience, not just an event.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Ideas Podcast. Before you go, please do let us know what you're taking away from this conversation and how you'll put it into action in the comments below. If you're watching on YouTube, please consider hitting the subscribe and like buttons, as it really helps us out.